VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And we do thank you for joining us today here on Crosstalk. Ladies and gentlemen, last week we made you aware of a critical case before the United States Supreme Court called NIFLA versus Becerra. Now, NIFLA is the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates, and Xavier Becerra is the Attorney General of the state of California. This case is one that, as I mentioned, would greatly impact crisis pregnancy centers on so many fronts. Well, yesterday the oral arguments were heard, presented before the justices of the U.S. Supreme Court. Our guest today was at the court, and so we welcome back to Crosstalk Attorney Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Matt, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be with you.
Matt, we know that you and I spent a full program last Friday talking about this case forthcoming, but before we speak what happened yesterday, I know we've got new and fresh listeners here today who missed our program last week, so if you would just give us, in brief, some of the background to this case.
Yeah, this case began when California decided to target crisis pregnancy centers, nonprofit crisis pregnancy centers. So this doesn't apply to commercial organizations that otherwise wouldn't be doing ministry. It doesn't apply to Planned Parenthood. It doesn't apply to doctor's offices that do abortion or doctor's offices at all. But it applies to crisis pregnancy centers. And what it requires these crisis pregnancy centers to do is post a notice of 29 words, two sentences long, at the entrance in the lobby, in your printed material and online, that specifically says, in the state's own words, that these women can have free or low-cost abortions provided by the state. So these are crisis pregnancy centers in the mission of saving lives. They're having to not only broadcast this message all over the place, but get this, they have to put it in 48-point font. Now, that's huge. And they have to put it in up to 13 languages, and in L.A. County, because of the different languages there, 13 languages. So you put this notice in 48-point font, 29 words, and put it in 13 languages on your entrance. I mean, it just swallows up your entrance, lobby.
No wallpaper needed.
No wallpaper. All of this, it blares out to you. And then try to create a brochure about your ministry. You can't do it. This overpowers it. It would just kill the brochure. Put it on your website. It's going to take pages for people to scroll through just to go through all the notices on your website. And if you don't comply, it's $500 for the first violation, which means any area where you need to put this, or every day, and $1,000 thereafter. So in other words, this violation will be $1,000 a day, $7,000 a week. And it would not only be a violation if you didn't put it on your entrance, $1,000 a day, but also, again, at your lobby, and then on your brochure, and then on your online. So you have all these different areas where if you don't put it, each one of those is $1,000. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines will accumulate in no time at all.
Wow. So, Matt, yesterday oral arguments were heard. They got underway at 10 a.m. Eastern time. You were there. What happened?
Well, I was very encouraged. You never can tell exactly where the court's going during oral argument, but I think you can certainly get a good direction, and I think the direction was very clear, and that is there's a majority of justices, including, amazingly, Justice Sotomayor, who I think will ultimately vote to strike down this law. And the turning point, I think, came in the last 15 minutes or so of the oral argument with the state attorney from California representing this law. And the questions were, and some of these came from Justice Sotomayor, who's typically on the more left-leaning side of the court, asked the question, would a crisis pregnancy center that puts up a billboard just with the name of the crisis pregnancy center and the words Choose Life be governed by this notice? At first, the attorney wanted to kind of weasel out of that answer. Came back again, asked, and the attorney said yes, and came back again and said later yes. And so then that just made the rest of the justices just unbelievably shocked. You mean to tell me that the words Choose Life on a billboard, just that alone, not offering any services, not offering anything, not saying anything about Crisis Pregnancy Center, just the name of the organization, and Choose Life. That would require a posting of 48-point font minimum, 13 languages all over the billboard.
Wow.
And the answer was yes. And the justices said, well, that's not just a notice. That is designed to overpower the Crisis Pregnancy Center's message.
I think Justice Sotomayor even used the term burdensome, didn't she?
She did, yeah. She said, well, that would be very burdensome to the First Amendment. Well, it's not only burdensome, it prohibits you from even speaking. It is the government piggybacking on your message, using your money to literally overpower your message. And the state attorney decided to say, well, you know, the reason why it's there, Sotomayor asked, well, why is this here? And he said, well, the reason is because some of these women go to these different centers and they don't know all the options that are available. And we just want to be able to make sure that they know all the options. But then he admitted it doesn't apply to for-profit organizations that, in fact, may not do abortions. They may do a lot of other things. They may do medical testing of a wide variety, but they may also provide free pregnancy tests and referrals, for example, to adoption. And it doesn't apply there because these are commercial organizations that don't primarily do crisis pregnancy centers. So if you're a crisis pregnancy center and that's what you primarily do, it doesn't apply. If you're a for-profit commercial organization and you do a lot of other things, and you also happen to do some kind of free pregnancy test or refer to adoption, it's not going to apply. So what's the real intent here?
Mm-hmm.
Real intent is to target one specific message from one specific group, and it's to literally put out of business the Crisis Pregnancy Centers, to stop their mission, and I think that became very clear during the argument yesterday.
Yeah, and all these carve-outs that exempts virtually everyone but these nonprofit pro-life centers.
That's right. And that was a subject of the argument as well, what they called gerrymandering, where they had made all these exemptions. So this group is exempt, Planned Parenthood is exempt, abortion providers are exempt. And by the way, there was a question, do they have to mention about the alternatives to abortion, such as adoption and crisis pregnancy centers? And the answer was, of course, no.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it goes one way. It's a one-way street. And then when you go through Planned Parenthood, abortion clinics, doctor's offices, these other commercial organizations, all exempted. Oh, guess what? You know, the one who doesn't have the chair, the music stops, there's no chair. Oh, that happens to be the crisis pregnancy centers. That didn't just happen. They intentionally made that happen, and therefore they intentionally tried to censor a specific message that they disagree with.
Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Council. Their website is lc.org, lc.org. Matt, going back to Justice Sotomayor, didn't she also imply with one of her questions that unlicensed pregnancy centers might be misleading pregnant women?
Yeah, she was asking the question that, and that was part of one of the questions. And so at some of the questions, you didn't know where some of the justices were going. They were asking questions like that. And the question was, what is the purpose behind this? And they ended up saying, well, because maybe some are misled because they don't know what the options are. Maybe it's something else. Maybe they just don't like the message. So it was asked in a context of asking the state attorney, give me your reasons why you did this. Was it because that you felt that they were being misled? And I can understand, you know, why the state might want to do that. Or was it for something else? But it ultimately led to the question that I think turned the tables, and that was the billboard question.
The Choose Life billboard.
The Choose Life billboard. You mean in some of the questions were like, how far does this actually apply? If we rule for you, what's the implication? So this was one of those cases. You mean to tell me the statute actually requires a crisis pregnancy center to put all of these disclaimers on a billboard when the message is simply Choose Life? It's that broad?
Mm-hmm.
And shockingly, the answer is yes.
Matt, Justice Ginsburg asked while posting the notice, isn't this just like requiring a doctor to provide informed consent before performing an abortion? Is there a difference, Matt, between those two?
Yeah, in fact, she was the very first question right out of the block, and that's really where she continued to come back and ask her questions. And it was, okay, back in 1992, Planned Parenthood versus Casey upheld an informed consent. So when a woman is going to an abortion clinic, Pennsylvania law required that they have information about the gestational age of the baby and other information. And she says, isn't it just like that? And the answer that came back, although Ginsburg wasn't buying it, but I think she's going to be in the dissenting minority, is there's a big difference. In that particular case, there's an actual medical procedure that's taking place. And it's just part of informed consent. So if that's what you're doing, doing an abortion, it's like doing a knee surgery or some other kind of medical intervention or surgical procedure. There are requirements that people know the implications of that procedure and the risk and benefits of that procedure. And so that falls in the same category of someone doing a medical procedure, giving informed consent. Whereas here, the difference is that the crisis pregnancy centers are not doing abortion. They're not doing abortion. They're, in fact, doing something completely different. But the law is now telling them to tell the women about abortion, something that they don't do. Completely different than a medical doctor doing something of a surgical nature and then having to inform the patient about the risk and benefits of that particular surgical situation. That's the distinction with Casey, but Ginsburg was just basically trying to lump it in together. Well, we said that doctors have to provide informed consent, so isn't this the same thing? It's really completely different.
Yeah,
and I think some of the other justices weren't buying Ginsburg's line of reasoning either.
I think Justice Breyer, though, said he saw the case as kind of like the pro-choice version of the Casey case.
Yeah, he did. Breyer, I think, is going to be in the dissent. I think he would uphold the law. I think Breyer might not even come to the merits of the case. Breyer wanted to maybe send it back down and try this another day. Maybe we need to have some more hearing on this because we don't know all the detail of how this will be applied. Kennedy later responded to that particular line of argument from Breyer, and he said, look, when they got to the billboard case, he says, we don't need to send this case back for a trial. I think we all know what a billboard looks like.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need to have a trial tell us what a billboard looks like. And on this billboard, the Choose Life message triggers the notice. It's pretty obvious. So, you know, I think we don't have Breyer. I think we don't have Ginsburg. Not quite sure where Kagan will ultimately fall down in this. But I believe we definitely have the conservative judges and justices, I should say, Kennedy, and I think we may even get Sotomayor.
We're going to take a quick break. We're talking with Matt Staver from Liberty Counsel, who was on the ground at the Supreme Court yesterday in NIFLA versus Becerra. More discussion after the break. This is Crosstalk on the VCY American Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, does natural selection occur today?
Chris, God created each basic category of life with a built-in adaptability to various conditions. Natural selection can choose from the variety which best fits an environment. But note that this is not evolution. It's merely selection of genes which already exist. Nothing new has evolved. Recently, a population of island lizards was introduced onto a new island. In 20 years, they had adapted, and their average leg length was shorter. Evolutionists crowed that this was a great evolutionary advancement, but big deal. Natural selection had occurred, but not evolution. Natural selection is not a creative process. Creation. Now, that did occur by the supernatural powers of God. Back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
We'll be right back.
This is Crosstalk on VCY America. Attorney Matt Staver with us today from Liberty Counsel, giving an oral arguments report from NIFLA versus Becerra that was heard yesterday before the U.S. Supreme Court. Matt, Justice Alito, he asked about just requiring all doctors who treat pregnant women to just post a sign about a full range of options available to them. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, these were some questions that they were presenting to both people, but Alito, I think, is going to definitely be with us on this case and find that this is unconstitutional. But the question came up is, would either side oppose, what if they just required everyone, like a neutral thing, everyone to just post their services? Not that you're posting something that you don't do. So in other words, not require crisis pregnancy centers to post about abortion options or abortion clinics to post about crisis pregnancy centers, but just simply post about what they do. So a crisis pregnancy center would be required, if they do this, to do, we do free pregnancy tests, we do sonograms, assuming they do it, we do counseling, we provide referrals for adoption. So basically just list your services, just like a company saying, we do this, we do brakes, we do transmissions, we do, engine overhauls, something of that nature. That was the question. The state, of course, really wasn't interested in that because the state doesn't want to just list. If they were really interested in informing the public so that when the public went to a particular facility, they would know, well, this one does abortions and this one provides free pregnancy tests and counseling and referrals to adoption. But that's not what they want.
Right.
Their whole motive is to silence. And so Alito was trying to ask questions along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he was upholding it. He wasn't saying that that's what he agrees would be constitutional, but he was asking those kinds of questions.
Yeah, can you imagine a Planned Parenthood or abortion facility having to post in large font, we kill your babies here, step right in?
Yeah. And this particular question that he was asking is basically you just list your services. So if you have it on the website, you just list what you do.
Mm-hmm.
That's really not that onerous for anyone because you want to list what you do. You provide free pregnancy tests, et cetera. But what you don't want to do is, and California is wanting them to do it, they're wanting to force this, what you don't want to do is promote abortion, particularly for crisis pregnancy centers. You don't want to promote death when you're in the mission of saving lives.
Right.
And you don't do abortions, so why should you be forced to refer to abortions?
Was Justice Gorsuch engaged in any questioning?
He was engaged in some questioning, and there has been some question about whether there's a little tension between Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Gorsuch, because Gorsuch is a pretty independent thinker. I kind of sensed that yesterday. I don't think it's going to split their vote or anything, but Gorsuch asked a question that a previous justice, I think Kagan or someone, had asked, and it seemed as though the question had been answered, and then Gorsuch followed up on it with a question, and while the attorney was answering, he says, go back and finish the question of the previous justice, which I thought was a little odd for the Chief Justice to do it. Maybe it didn't indicate anything between the two, who knows, but on this particular case, and I think as it relates to the substance of any case, it's not going to play a difference. But whether there's a little bit of a personality conflict there, I don't know. But I can tell you that when Gorsuch did ask a question or he did make a statement, he was right on the money and he was very clear. In fact, it was during the first part of the argument when the case was being argued, Gorsuch is the one who zeroed right into the 48-point font. That's not just a notice. Let's remember, this is a 48-point font notice, and he zeroed in on that quite early in the argument.
The topic of professional speech came up yesterday. What's meant by that?
Well, here's the situation. The Solicitor General did this. Solicitor General may not all be on our same wavelength, both in the cake baker case last year or in this case. So the Solicitor General, this is part of the Department of Justice, so I'm not sure why Jeff Sessions didn't intervene, but they filed a brief on behalf of neither party, in support of neither party. Now, what does that mean? It usually means that part of their argument supports one party, and part of their argument supports another party, so it's in favor of neither party. And that's, in fact, what happened. The United States government filed a brief supporting the crisis pregnancy centers that are licensed crisis pregnancy centers, but then try to come up with a so-called professional speech for unlicensed crisis pregnancy centers that are also regulated by the law, but which would have a lower level of review. In other words, that the law should be unconstitutional as it applies to licensed pregnancy centers, but may well be constitutional as it applies to unlicensed crisis pregnancy centers. We represent both, and both were represented before the court in these cases. That is a very bizarre situation for them to try to come up with a new category of speech. Alito, although the Solicitor General did not bring that up in the argument, Alito did. And Alito went right after the Solicitor General about this professional speech. And he said, one, we've said we're going to be very careful about creating new categories of speech. Two, what's a professional? Journalists are professionals. Even, he said, there's a case out there with a fortune teller. That's a professional. Someone else, and he listed a whole bunch of professionals that speak. He says, how do you define professional? And he literally shot down this whole argument that the Solicitor General was arguing in the brief, but didn't try to argue during the oral argument. And I think he shot it down in case one of the other justices was thinking that maybe they'll split the baby with the bathwater and strike down the law regarding licensed, but uphold it regarding licensed. No one else picked up on that, so I don't see at all the court coming up with a whole new category of so-called professional speech, and I don't see them at all saying that it's unconstitutional for licensed crisis pregnancy centers, but constitutional for unlicensed. In fact, the court didn't seem to buy the whole distinction between First Amendment applying different ways between the two kinds of crisis pregnancy centers.
So, Matt, it seems you're very optimistic as to how you see justices leaning. What happens now? The oral arguments were heard yesterday. What happens now?
Well, what happens now is at the end of this week, the justices will sit together in a room. The Chief Justice will begin. He'll state his position and why. And then it goes to the next most senior justice. And finally, it's going to end up with Justice Gorsuch. And at that time, Justice Gorsuch will either be irrelevant to the vote in the sense that it's already clear that there's a majority going one way, or if it's a 4-4 split, he becomes the most important person in the room because his vote then determines the majority. So it goes from the most senior to the most junior. And then when there's that majority determined, the Chief Justice will assign a justice, or maybe himself, to actually write the opinion. They try to alternate in terms of which one's next in line to write an opinion so that they kind of distribute the workload. Then that will begin the writing phase. So that'll happen on Friday, and then so that writing phase will begin. And then the writing phase will take place, and once a draft of that opinion is done, it gets circulated among the other justices, and they decide whether, you know, they go back and forth. Do they want to sign on, but I don't like that particular sentence, or they want to dissent, or they want to file their own opinion, and eventually the opinion is finalized, and it's going to be released. This one will probably, since it got argued late in the term, in March, it'll probably go down through the last week of June before we have a decision.
Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. And, folks, what this does, it underscores the importance of prayer. Many of you praying yesterday for this hearing, and thank you for doing so. Continue to be in prayer, because this Friday, as the justices come together, they will render their individual decisions and collectively will form the majority and minority opinions on this. And Matt, even through the writing process, we need to continue in prayer during this time as well.
Yeah, because a majority can later become a minority, and the two famous cases that we know this happened in is Planned Parenthood versus Casey, 1992, the majority to strike down Roe versus Wade by one vote became the minority 1 month before they released the opinion, and it flipped. And also the 5-4 decision to strike down Obamacare, the majority became 5-4 to uphold Obamacare 1 month before it was released as well. So yes, the vote will happen Friday. Yes, there's going to be a majority and a minority, but things can still change as they move through this writing phase. So keep this in prayer. It's not over until it's over.
Matt, yesterday also a very significant day. Not only were oral arguments heard, but Mississippi became the first state here in the United States to ban abortion at 15 weeks. And almost immediately we have a judge who is blocking the law when an abortion clinic filed suit against it. Your thoughts here on Mississippi?
Yeah, there's been other states that have banned abortion at 20 weeks or more, but Mississippi became the first one to ban it at 15 weeks or more. And in lightning speed, as though the opinion was already drafted, unbelievable, a judge stopped it and blocked it. The one abortion clinic there in that state ultimately filed suit, and a judge literally stopped it in its tracks. Unbelievable. You rarely ever see, and certainly on our side, those kind of lightning fast decisions by judges, but you saw that here in this case. And now it's going to be litigated. So we're going to actually, I just got an email from some people who are very familiar with the risk of abortions and the complications and all the problems, particularly in that state and other states, but in that state, we're going to be putting together a brief that actually details all of the medical risk and the gestational age of the baby and reasons why this law is constitutional.
Yeah, and I understand that the abortion clinic said, hey, wait a second, we've got a woman here who is 15 weeks or more pregnant, scheduled to have an abortion on Tuesday late afternoon. So they appealed to U.S. District Judge Carlton Reeves, who put a stay on that law from taking place.
Yeah, they did. Now, whether they actually have someone like that, or certainly, they get people from all these different gestational ages. But, yeah, the sad thing is that by the end of the day, absent some miracle and intervention, a little baby will have tragically lost its life.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman will have this to carry with her for the rest of her life, that she killed her child, maybe the only child that she would ever have. But the horror of abortion is at the same equivalent of ISIS, how they brutally dismember, kill, torture, and just literally shred a human body, burn it, whatever they do in their outrage, in their evil, that happens inside the womb to these precious children. It is outrageous, and I think this kind of situation in which a judge just immediately blocks this law from going into effect has an immediate consequence of resulting in the death of another human being is the reason why I think people just really get outraged at these out-of-control judges.
Absolutely. Hold the law, Judge. Hold the law here. Don't put it in place. We've got a baby to kill. And, folks, that's what is taking place in this this petition here to block the rule in Tennessee. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk. If you'd like to get on board, our telephone number, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829.
Today, the hope that all believers on earth will be caught up to heaven is being challenged in new ways of criticism. Is the rapture actually taught in the Bible? Can we really expect Jesus to gather up his followers before the Antichrist is revealed? Will God pour out his wrath on believers? In the book, Can We Still Believe in the Rapture?, authors Ed Heinsohn and Mark Hitchcock examine the concept and the context of the rapture with a thorough defense for the event. They answer questions such as, what is the rapture? Is there any historical precedent for it? Why do some Christians object to the idea of a rapture? And does the timing of the rapture really make a difference? Is it imminent? The authors explore the scriptures on these important issues. Copies of Can We Still Believe in the Rapture are available for a donation of $16 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
This is Crosstalk here on VCY America. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. LC.org is our website, LC.org. He was at the Supreme Court yesterday for the case of NIFLA versus Becerra, and certainly having huge ramifications upon crisis pregnancy centers. Taking your questions and comments today, our number is 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. Matt, a couple other issues, and this caught our attention from LifeNews.com, dated March 20th, and here we have a South Carolina abortion clinic caught on video illegally transporting the bodies of aborted babies in a car, transferring them to a waste management company. Whistleblowers have uncovered this ongoing illegal transactions of aborted baby body parts with the Greenville, South Carolina abortion clinic and Stericycle, the largest biological waste hauler here in America. But on several occasions here, they've got the evidence of transferring these aborted baby body parts to a Stericycle waste truck at a local gas station and making the transfer.
Yeah. I mean, and they've been cited now for violating the law. 9 different regulations: illegally transferring and storing infectious waste, which is our aborted babies, transferring waste at a non-designated transfer facility, a gas station. I mean, they're transporting human body parts at a gas station. Another one is not having a properly marked transfer vehicle and leak-resistant cargo carrying containers, not being registered as a transporter of infectious waste, having no infectious waste management plan, illegally transferring and storing infectious waste, which are body parts, illegally transferred infectious waste from one vehicle to another at a non-designated transfer. That's Stericycle. Now, we know from our client, Sandra Susan Merritt, that this kind of thing has been happening because she's one of the two people that did the undercover investigation videos of Planned Parenthood. We've all seen those videos. And they're still out there on the web. Many of them are out there. We also know that Planned Parenthood was selling these body parts to these companies. And one of them actually created body parts catalogs.
Oh, my.
Just like you would have an auto parts catalog or some other home decor catalog. And in the catalogs were human baby body parts, bone marrow, lungs, hearts, brain tissue, you name it, they were all listed there with prices. And then each month they would run the special of the month, the hot selling item of that month. It's just like unbelievable. These are human baby body parts, and they were marking up the prices, some of them 700% markup from the purchase price that they bought them. Planned Parenthood, we know from testimony, they actually had a policy in place to not allow that to happen, believe it or not. But they found out that their affiliates were selling baby body parts, and instead of telling them, get in line with our policy, guess what Planned Parenthood did? This is the national organization. They did away with the policy so that these abortion affiliates could continue to sell these baby body parts. That's why the Department of Justice is current. That's why the Senate and the House have recommended criminal prosecution of Planned Parenthood, and it's why the Department of Justice is currently investigating Planned Parenthood for possible criminal violations. But this, Jim, with Planned Parenthood and these abortion clinics, is going on every day, and they're harvesting baby body parts, and in some cases, they're selecting certain kinds of babies because it's a hot selling item. It's kind of like a certain product is moving fast in the store. You need to get more of that particular product. Well, if kidneys are the hot item that these companies that are buying the parts from the abortion clinics want, then guess what they're going to do? They're going to abort babies for kidneys. They're going to select babies and they're going to abort them in ways that ultimately would save that particular body part from being crushed during the process. So they're going to even do more inhumane kind of abortion procedures so that they can get better prices for certain hot selling commodities of baby body parts. It's absolutely, you can't even hardly, you can't really, you can't wrap your mind around kind of evil.
Barbarism.
Yeah.
Matt, one other issue here, and that is Iowa has had some legislation introduced as well that is kind of known as a heartbeat bill, that you cannot perform an abortion on a child that has a detectable heartbeat. Those of you listening in Iowa right now, you need to be made aware of this. But what's so disturbing is this letter to the editor that appeared in the Des Moines Register, of which 68 Iowa faith leaders said, "We support women's right to an abortion." And of course, they go to all the liberal denominations and so forth. But talking about arguments based only in religious beliefs, it's going to create harm to Iowa women and women's right to make their own medical decisions. They say any law that strips a woman of her faith and tries instead to legislate her values for her is immoral. Matt, it's repulsive to see these so-called faith leaders coming out in a public letter to advocate for the killing of babies in the womb.
Yeah, well, you look at these so-called faith leaders, there are 68 individuals who call themselves faith leaders that signed this letter, and they're from the Presbyterian Churches USA. Well, that denomination has gone way over the line on abortion. Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, United Church of Christ, Disciples of Christ, all very liberal in their theology, and therefore they become liberal in life. American Baptist Churches, again, USA, Reformed Churches in America, Unity Church, Episcopal Church, and United Methodist Church. These are people, and it's not the denominations per se that are saying this, but it's people within those denominations, faith leaders that represent those denominations. But again, some of them, as denominations, are very pro-abortion. No wonder why they're losing members. No wonder why they have gone this far on the issue of abortion, because they have previously rejected the authority of the Bible in so many cases. And now this is just another step of rejecting the sanctity of human life. But, you know, Jesus said, and it's a passage that, you know, when I was younger and I read it, where it says in the Sermon on the Mount, in that day people will come to me saying, "Lord, Lord, did we not do all these wonderful things in your name and even cast out demons in your name?" And Jesus says, Depart from me, you evil workers. I never knew you.
Yeah.
And you wonder, these are people masquerading with religious language, but they don't know Jesus. They don't know the one who they even talk about, if they even talk about him. And I think that's what we're seeing today. We're seeing a real separation. We're seeing a real falling away of some of these churches, particularly church leaders, that pretend to be. You know, Jesus also says, whoever puts a stumbling block in front of these little children, it's better if a millstone were hung around their neck and they were thrown into the water. Jesus loved children, and these people are advocating the brutal dismemberment, death, and torture of children.
Folks, it's outrageous what is going on, and to see faith leaders take such positions, and I would certainly suggest that if you're in a church whose faith leader is speaking out like this, to advocate for the taking of innocent life in the womb, time to find another church, folks.
Yeah.
Our phone number to Crosstalk, by the way, if you'd like to comment on these issues, maybe you've got a question about the Supreme Court case or other issues here pertaining to the issue of life. Folks, it's outrageous what is how pro-life centers, crisis pregnancy centers have been targeted in this regard. Our phone number is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. John is calling from Utica, Minnesota, and John, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I guess I keep thinking about this as far as enacting legislation that overrules homosexuality and abortion and all this stuff. You know, the person still has the right to choose imminent death in hell. You know, what I don't like is the fact that we don't have the right as citizens to resist dealing with those people or doing business with those people. You know, to tell them they can't do this is one thing. But to let them go like we're doing with the law now and say, yes, it's fine, you can be a homosexual, you can be a transgender, you can do all this, and then penalize me for not wanting to do business with them or with the abortion thing. If I choose not to support abortion, then all of a sudden then I'm an evil, wicked person,
mm-hmm.
and that's the part that irritates me. So,
yeah,
any comments?
I understand.
I'm
that's
just going
to listen
to your
comments. That's a battle right now before the U.S. Supreme Court in the Jack Phillips case with the baker. Can the government force an individual against their religious and moral convictions to actually promote and participate in a same-sex wedding?
Mm-hmm.
I think the answer clearly is no. It violates the very fundamental freedom. I don't think either side ought to be forced to do it. I don't think a homosexual baker should be forced to bake a cake for someone in a natural marriage if they had an objection. And I don't think that certainly Christians or anyone else should be forced to bake a cake or do something promoting a same-sex marriage. I think it's a right of conscience. But it's a one-way street for these people. It's a one-way street because they want to use the force of government. They talk about choice and freedom. They are not interested in choice or freedom. They want to use the force of law to force you and I to not only be quiet, but to promote their particular ideology and viewpoint.
Roy is next in Bayside. You're on the air, Roy.
Do either of you know the name of the president who appointed the federal judge in Mississippi who took action to counter the pro-life action of the Mississippi legislature in banning abortions after 15 weeks?
You know, I did not yet look that up, but I can find that pretty quickly.
I think we should make a practice of that, naming the presidents who named some of these terrible judges. Maybe some of these presidents weren't as conservative or as moderate as they claim to be.
Well, that's true. And in fact, you see that a lot with Republicans. You don't see that right now with President Trump. President Trump has been appointing judges, like he did Justice Gorsuch, to the bench that are real constitutionalists so far. Now, he may make a misstep here and there. I don't know. But he hasn't yet from where I have seen his appointments. Very strong on that. But other presidents, even Reagan gave us O'Connor, and we have Kennedy. And these came, and George H.W. Bush gave us the former Justice Souter. These are Republican presidents that weren't as serious about putting people on the bench who are constitutionalists, mm-hmm. and then we've paid the price for it.
Matt, I just looked up here, and according to Wikipedia, just put it up, Carlton Reeves was appointed by Barack Obama in 2010.
Well,
there you go.
I mean, yeah. I can tell you, one of the things he did was all of the judges that he appointed are very liberal ideologues, and I've been before a number of them. I've not been before a single judge that Obama has appointed that wasn't an activist judge.
A shameful record for Obama.
Thank you for the call here, Roy. We're going to take a quick break, then more of your phone calls after the break here on Crosstalk. Attorney Matt Staver with us from Liberty Counsel. Again, their website is lc.org. Certainly Standing for Life is just one of the aspects of this ministry, and we'd encourage you to get involved and learn more about Liberty Counsel. The many helpful articles that will help protect your faith, your family, your freedoms here, your constitutional freedoms at lc.org. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website is worldviewtimes.com. Sadly, many neo-evangelicals are promoting the talking points and information operation of the communist and the Marxist, and it's called white privilege. At their own conference in Madison, Wisconsin, the white privilege proponents declared that if you're a Christian and a capitalist, you're definitely a racist. Well, refuting the white privilege lie, Dennis Prager writes that there are many privileges that dwarf white privilege, and one of them is two-parent privilege. He talks about the great advantages you have, regardless of your race or sex, if you're raised in a home where the parents are married. In fact, that's why the poverty rate among two-parent black families is only 7%. Compare that to a 22% poverty rate among whites in single-parent homes. Obviously, the two-parent home is the decisive privilege. Do not buy the lie of the communist and the Marxist that's now been picked up by many evangelical pastors, the lie of white privilege. For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House.
Matt Staver is with us today from Liberty Council, and certainly we're talking about the oral arguments report coming out from NIFLA versus Becerra. It's oral arguments heard on Tuesday, and let's take more calls. Jeremiah is calling from Mississippi. Hi, Jeremiah. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just listened to what y'all talked about. I don't agree with the abortion or the homosexual marriage or that either. And one of the things that irritates me about the whole bakery deal is, you know, if they didn't want to make them a cake, they should have went and found somebody else. Why make a big stir of something that, you know, like you said, they have the rights to do what they want?
Yeah.
I guess, to an extent, but everything I say, I just fall back to about what Bob says about, you know, that it'll be where they'll look at the wrong is right and right is wrong.
Yeah.
Just see more of it come to pass every day.
You're right, Jeremiah. Thank you so much for the call. And, Matt, this is really about forcing individuals. Not only will you be tolerant of my viewpoint, but we're going to force you to accept it and force you to promote it.
Husband has a floral shop out west, and this is what a trade she learned from her mother. She considers it her mission. She has a client who she had made lots of different floral arrangements for and liked him and actually baked cupcakes just to bring him in to give it to him. And one day after years of friendship, he comes in and says he wants her to do a floral arrangement for his same-sex ceremony. And she grabbed his hand and said, you know, I love you, but I can't do that. And she explained it would be against her religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. She recommended him to go to another place that he could have that done. And instead, they filed suit. She now stands to lose everything. She is still in the floral business, but who knows for how long. And she and her husband and their children and grandchildren, they have a farm that they visit. They stand to lose all of that.
Wow.
Just because they wanted to force her. Even though there are other people out there, they wanted to force her to promote the message of same-sex unions.
We have an anonymous caller. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to know what could a woman do if she's had an abortion years before she even came to know the Lord?
Mm-hmm.
And
good question.
She is finding hard to forgive herself and hates herself for it.
Yeah.
Is that fetus in heaven?
That happens all the time. You know, there's people who may not know the Lord at the time that they're doing this. There's some that may know the Lord, but they're just confused. They're getting wrong information from friends and from other places, and they make a mistake, and they end up taking the life of their child. Later, they realize what they've done, and it's a horrible thing to live with. But you know, the amazing thing is that Jesus will forgive anyone who asks, and Jesus will forgive this woman and heal that woman. And I've known so many people that have gone through this post-trauma of abortion, hating themselves, not knowing why, involving in drugs or promiscuous behavior, risky behavior, not knowing why they're doing it. They just have this dissatisfaction, this self-hatred, and then ultimately coming to a place where they realize what they had done and give their life to the Lord. And I've known so many people that have been healed, and they've been set free from their past. I mean, even King David, he's called a man after God's own heart. And look what King David did. King David set up a situation in which he engaged in adultery, and in order to try to cover it up, he sent the woman's husband to the front lines and ordered the soldiers to withdraw so he would be out there and be killed. You know, he ultimately repented from that. He realized how terribly wrong it was. God used him. He was the king. who ultimately established Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And he was later called a man after God's own heart. So God will forgive anyone. There's ministries out there and resources out there that will help women to process this and to share the gospel with them and give them freedom and set you free from the chains that bind you.
Is this baby in heaven?
Is the baby in heaven?
Yes.
You know, I am not in a position to say who's in heaven or who's not in heaven, but God's in control. And, you know, this innocent child, before they even had one moment outside of the womb, had something done horrible. You know, God loves them just as much as, and unfathomably more than we do. And, you know, I think that God will ultimately welcome them into his arms. You know, Jesus will reach out to the family, to you, if you have been a victim of this and made a mistake, or someone else. In fact, if you want to call us or someone needs to call us, if you just call us at 407-875-1776, 407-875-1776, you can ask for some resource or some prayer regarding this, or someone that you know, and we'll put you in touch with some prayer and some help.
And
we'll walk someone through this.
Yeah,
and
we'll give that number in just a moment, but let me just also just say that you can even look in your phone book at Crisis Pregnancy Centers. There will be resources there to be of help to you. And, Matt, I often think, too, of David and Bathsheba when the baby was lost, and David said that he can't come to me, but I'll go to him, seeming to indicate that child was in heaven. And this is something certainly we can find strength and comfort in that regard. But, Matt, she's asking again for your phone number.
The phone number is 407-875-1776, 407-875-1776. And let me just say, our website also is lc.org, just two letters, lc.org, like in Liberty Council, lc.org, so you can always contact us through that. If you're talking about having gone through this yourself, let me just assure you that there's nothing that you can do that's going to put you away from God's grace. And as much as we have fallen, and no matter what we do, you know, God will forgive you. If you just reach out and ask him to be your Savior and forgive you, he will cleanse you. And he'll make you a new creation.
Amen. And we're out of time. I hope you'll follow up with Liberty Council. They'll give you some referrals there as well. But thank you so much for your call here today. Matt Staver with us from Liberty Council. And a very important topic, a very important Supreme Court case. We need to continue to be in prayer. Matt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And again, folks, the website, lc.org.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.